need you to turn in the book of Ruth. Book of Ruth, please. If you're not sure where it is, go to the front of the Bible and look it up. I had a brain freeze on Friday night. I couldn't find it. I looked for it and I looked for it and I looked for it. And I had to use the words in the order of service. So don't be embarrassed if you can't find it. We're going to read the third chapter together of this book of Ruth. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not seek rest for you that it may be well with you? Is not Boaz our relative, with whose young woman you were? See, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Wash therefore and anoint yourself and put on your cloak and go down to the threshing floor. Do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking." But when he lies down, observe the place where he lies. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do. And she replied, "All that you say I will do." So she went down to the threshing floor and did just as her mother-in-law had commanded her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. Then she came softly and uncovered his feet and lay down. At midnight the man was startled, turned over, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. He said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer." And he said, "May you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. You have made this last kindness greater than the first, in that you have not gone after young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask, for all my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman. And now it is true that I am a redeemer. Yet there is a redeemer nearer than I. Remain tonight and in the morning. If he will redeem you, good, let him do it. But if he is not willing to redeem you, then, as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Lie down until the morning." So she lay at his feet until the morning, but arose before one could recognize another. And he said, "Let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor." And he said, "Bring the garment you are wearing and hold it out." So she held it out, and he measured out 6 measures of barley and put it on her. Then she went into the city. When she came to her mother-in-law and said, "How did you fare, my daughter?" Then she told her all that the man had done for her, saying, "These 6 measures of barley he gave for me," or to me, "for he said to me, 'You must not go back empty-handed to your mother-in-law.'" She replied, "Wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today." We've been looking at this small, engaging book of Ruth during this last 3 or 4 evenings, and we'll do so today and this evening, and possibly even next Lord's Day as well. We have been acquainted with the fact that this book is set in the context of national heartache. There was a famine in the land. There was personal heartache because the 3 women that we encountered in the first chapter, a woman called Naomi lost her husband Elimelech. He died. And then these 2 younger women, 2 Moabite women, Orpha and Ruth, who had married Naomi and Elimelech's 2 sons, Mahlon and Chilion, the 2 men had died as well. When the famine had come Elimelech had taken his family from Israel to Moab. Dwelt in Moab, he died. His two sons married Orpha, Ruth, one each, obviously. And they died. And there was great heartache. Great heartache. Then we read that the Lord visited the land of Israel and that the famine was displaced with blessing. The Lord allowed the crops in Israel to blossom again. And Naomi in the field hears this news and she makes a conscious decision that she's going to go back to Israel, back to Judah where she's from. They're in a very, very vulnerable situation. Obviously, physical protection would no longer have been afforded them because their husbands were dead. There would have been an emotional vulnerability as well. Three women losing their husbands, it's obvious there'd be emotional vulnerability. But Naomi decides to go back to Israel, and the two girls begin to accompany her along the road. She obviously wasn't anticipating them to go with her, but as they go, then she stops them and says to them, listen, you need to go back to your home in Moab, back to your mother's house, because there's nothing for you in Israel. In the first chapter, we saw how she spoke about the fact of, Naomi said, if even I was to marry again today, and I was to conceive two sons, would you wait until they had grown up before you would marry them? Her point being, there's no point in you two young women leaving your home, leaving the possibility of marriage and family, if God blesses you with that, to go into Israel with me, where you have no prospect of anything other than hard work for the rest of my days and for the rest of your days. Orpha listens to her mother-in-law. She takes the reasoned argument that Naomi makes. It's common sense. Why would someone want to go into a foreign land as a young widow, place herself in a very vulnerable position, have no friends other than an old lady who could die at any time and leave you in that foreign land on your own, when you could go back to your own home, back to your own family, back, re-establish the relationships you had, and possibly then have a future in terms of marriage and family? It's not that Orpha doesn't care for Ruth or Naomi. Obviously she does, because she weeps and she hugs her. So there's obviously a bond between Orpha and Naomi, but Orpha decides to go back. Ruth decides to do that which doesn't make any sense. Ruth decides to go into Israel. And as we considered on one of the evenings of the past week, the fact that that choice arose not because she thought that she had some romantic notion of helping Naomi. It wasn't because she thought it'll look good if I go into Judah with Naomi, and the prospects for me in Judah are more promising than they will be in my hometown. There was no romantic, emotional nonsense in Ruth's head or heart. She understood very clearly, very wise, intuitive young woman, she understood very clearly what lay ahead of her. As a young widow in a foreign land with no real prospects. But she chose to do it, as we see or saw in chapter 1, because there was one driving motivation in her heart. And that was to have a relationship with God. she had seen in Naomi's life and through the bitter experiences of Naomi's life, because Naomi speaks later of the Lord's hand being heavy upon her. She doesn't say that in an angry way or a disrespectful way or a way that conveys a sense of, God, I absolutely and utterly despise you because I left Judah, went into Moab with my husband who was well and fine. We had plenty to look after ourselves. We had two young sons. And you took first my husband Elimelech, then you took Mahlon, and then you took Chilion, and you left me on my own with these two young widows. How can you say you love me, God, at all? Doesn't make any sense. That wasn't the attitude of Naomi's heart. Naomi accepted what God had done. She accepted it, and we see that she still loved God, because when she said to Orpah and Ruth about leaving and going back to their own land, she actually commits them. She says, may the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. Now, if you were angry with God and you loved someone and you were saying to them, it would be better if you did this and went here, you wouldn't turn around and say to them, would you? And I hope the Lord who has dealt harshly with me deals harshly with you. Nor would you commit them into the Lord's keeping. You wouldn't say, well, the Lord has dealt harshly with me, but I'm going to commit you into his keeping. Unless you actually loved him and understood what he was doing. She obviously loved God. And Ruth saw that in Naomi. Ruth saw in the hurt of Naomi, in the loss of her husband and her two sons, she saw a realism. She saw a depth of honesty. She saw an integrity. She saw something that was real. She saw and she heard Naomi talk about God in a way that wasn't glib or offhand. She didn't hear just about Naomi use words like, I believe in God, or I believe in Jesus. She saw that Naomi really did know God, that Naomi really trusted in God. And whenever she heard the words, may the Lord grant you that you may find rest, she knew that Naomi was saying that because she really believed that God would give rest to them. And so Ruth went back with Naomi into Judah. And God then, we saw, provided for them both protection and provision. They went in alone. They went in with nothing, as it were, in terms of providing for them or protecting them. And we saw how that God had provided a law in his word that meant the widows had to be provided for through the gleaning time of the harvest, so that when the harvesters passed through and went through the land, that the men reaping had to not glean the field or not harvest the field right up entirely to the edges of the field, but there was to be a portion left around the external perimeter of the field, which was to be left for those who were in physical destitution and need. And this was God's way of providing for people who couldn't provide for themselves in other ways, and particularly the fatherless and the widow. And so, going on the basis of that opportunity, Ruth went into the field of a man named Boaz. Now, she didn't know who Boaz was. She didn't know all that was going to befall her or bless her through Boaz. She just went out and took the opportunity that God gave her through this law. And she got up early in the morning and she went out and she worked. And she worked all day with but little rest. She made a choice to go into Israel and into Judah, in particular Bethlehem, in order to find God and to seek after God and to know God. She made that choice. Against all common sense, she made that choice. And now that she's made that choice, a choice that God put in her heart, she then comes to a place where God provides and protects her, because as we saw on Friday night, she is in the field of this man, who is a man who loves God too, a godly, caring man. He identifies her. She has gone to his field not knowing whose field it is. He comes along from a business trip from Bethlehem. He sees this young woman in his field and he makes an inquiry of his reapers. Who is she? And they tell him she's a young Moabite woman who's come back with Naomi and she's been here working all day and she hasn't taken a rest. And he speaks to her and he says to her, I'm going to look after you. I want you to stay in this field. I want you to stay with my young woman. They'll keep you safe. He then says to his young men, stay away from her. Don't touch her. And then he says to her, when it comes to times for meals and you want refreshment, then you drink from what's in the field that the young men will give you. Now that was an offer that wasn't made to everyone. But God was preparing the way for this young woman. And not only did he prepare for her in the field, he then gave her a large amount of grain. He did that indirectly because what he did was he said to the reapers, I want you to leave some of the harvest behind. Whenever this girl is coming after you, then I want you not to gather up all the stalks. I want you to leave some deliberately for her to get. Again, the reapers would never have done that. A man in a field would never have left something of the harvest for someone else to pick up. All right along the ages, that was governed by the principle of God's law, but never in the field itself. And so here, this young woman is being provided for, and she's being provided for by God. By God. It's not an accident. It's not a piece of luck. There is a gracious, provisional, and providential encounter here that God is providing for her. So there's provision and need. But then, there's an issue arises. And this is the real issue, in a sense, of this whole book. For Naomi was not simply concerned about their physical protection and their provision in Judah. It wasn't just about, well, we have enough to eat. Well, we have somewhere to sleep. Well, we have somewhere to stay. Naomi identifies the real need in her life and in the life of Ruth. The real need in her life and the life of Ruth. That real need is summed up in two words. Name and land. Name and land. Naomi understood that for the dynasty of her family to be maintained, that Ruth would have to marry again. And if she was going to marry, now that she had made the choice to come to Israel, if she was going to marry again, that was really, really important. Because unless you were named among the tribes of Israel, you could not take possession of any land in Israel. And so Naomi is not simply concerned about her life now, nor the duration of Ruth's life. She is looking to the prospect for the life of those who will follow after. Naomi doesn't say, it's great that you're out working in the fields and that you're getting the harvest that you need and that we're gleaning from that harvest and that provides for us our daily sustenance. That will mean that will see us through, as it were, the winter. And you're in a good place because this man has told you to stay in his fields and glean with him, not just through the barley harvest, but through all the wheat harvest as well. In other words, the barley harvest you can take from that, and then you can take from the wheat harvest as well. This is long-term provision and care that this man is offering to this young woman, and through her to Naomi. But for Naomi, she is not simply content with getting her physical needs met now. She wants the name and then the accompanying land, or the connection with the name to the land, not because she's a money grabber, but because of the spiritual identification of those in the land of God with God. Every tribe that had come into the land of Canaan had been given a portion of the land, and that land was a symbolic representation and a tangible evidence of God's love for them as a people. They weren't to sell that land. They weren't to trade that land. One tribe wasn't to trade it with other tribes. One family wasn't to trade it with another family. That was given to them by God as their posterity. God was saying, I will be your God and you will be my people. I will love you with steadfast covenant love and you will love me. God was saying to them, I will bless you with all that you need, materially, spiritually, emotionally, physically. All I want you to do is to love me. And Naomi understood that. She understood that. And that's the reason why Naomi tells Ruth to go and to sleep at the feet of Boaz. She's not exposing her to a very vulnerable situation, because she says concerning this that Boaz is a man of integrity and that he is a man who will not do anything inappropriate with her. She understands not just her need, but Ruth's need, and the need of the family for the future. And I stress, it's not about getting a material foothold into the life of this man and his property. This is not a widow seeking to get her claws or talons into a wealthy man's inheritance. This is about a godly woman seeking by God's law to pursue that opportunity that God has provided for the spiritual good of her family. You see, God had made a law, and that law was that if a widow died, a man died and his wife was left a widow, then it was the responsibility of the deceased's brother to marry the widow, and if they had any children, that those children would not take on the name of the one who had married the widow. Those children would take on the name of the deceased brother. And so the one who was alive would have his family, and the one who was dead, his name would be continued on through the descendancy of his children. And so there was a spiritual blessing to be kept, even for the children born of a widow within Israel. And Naomi understood this. That's why she says in chapter 3, verse 2, is Boaz our relative with whose young woman you were? So, is not Boaz our relative? So, Naomi is saying that her two sons have died, Mahlon and Chilion. Therefore, obviously, she doesn't have any other sons who can marry Ruth and take up this redeemer right, as it were. And so, if there wasn't a brother to marry the widow, Then it went out to the next nearest descendant, and out to a cousin or some other male descendant in the family, and it would keep going out down through the line until there was one man who would take up that responsibility, marry the widow, and therefore be a material blessing, but more importantly, a spiritual blessing to her and her descendants. And that's the reason why that Naomi tells Boaz to do this strange and odd thing. Wash yourself, therefore, anoint yourself, put your cloak on, go to the threshing floor. She knew that Boaz would be there because she knew at harvest times that the owner of the property, the harvest, would go to the threshing floor and sleep there at night time so that nobody would come in and steal it. There were crooks in those days as well as today, as we saw repeatedly. These people, at this stage, everyone did what was right in their own eyes. And she told her what to do. He says, when he lies down, then you lie at his feet, let him sleep. You uncover his feet, you lie down, and you stay there. Ruth has a choice to make. Ruth can say, I don't like this. I don't like the idea of me going to have to lie down at the feet of this older man. Because she understood from what Naomi was saying that she was basically offering herself in marriage to Boaz. And whilst she loved Naomi and she had experienced blessing and protection by virtue of her relationship with Naomi, well, this is a different matter, isn't it? This is you being told who to marry. Young widow, beautiful, foreigner. There's a lot of risks here in her following through on this suggestion of Naomi. And yet, we read that Ruth's response in verse 5 is, all that you say, I will do. All that you say, I will do. We saw on Wednesday night the heartache of these women and the loss of their husbands. And we thought a little about the loss of our relationship with God because of the sin of Adam in the Garden of Eden. And that relationship and the loss of that relationship is real. That the issues in our lives, although we tend to make choices and explain them in a variety of ways, they all have that one source. They all have that one root. That relationship which we have with God has been broken. From the moment we're conceived and live our lives, that relationship with God is broken. And we saw how that Ruth took a decision to go into Jerusalem, rather go to Judah, because she saw the evidence in Naomi's life of a real relationship with God, and that Ruth wanted to experience something of that real relationship with God herself. And you may be here this morning and you may have followed that train of thought and you may have thought, well, if I want to know about God and if I want to have this relationship with God restored in my life, then I have to go to the place where I will hear about God. Where I will hear about God. And that will not be in the world. You don't hear about God in the world. You only truly hear about God where God's word is read and explained. That's the only place you really hear about God. But there's a difference, you see, between going into Judah and to try and to seek out where God is, and this situation that Naomi and Ruth now find themselves in, where Naomi says, we have a real need deeper than the physical need, the material need. There's a spiritual need that goes to the very heart of who we are. that there has to be the continuation of the name of this family, not so that we will have money or power or influence or land or property. It's not about that. It's about the spiritual relationship that we will have in Israel with God by virtue of the fact that we will own this portion of land that has been given to us as a descendant. And so this woman seeks to have that relationship reestablished, not for the sake of material blessing, but for the sake of spiritual vitality. And the route to that restoration in this case is through this man, Boaz, who will be her redeemer, who will buy them out of the situation that they're in. Ruth goes and lies at his feet. He's startled. He awakens up. He says, "Who are you?" And then she introduces herself as a servant, and she explains why she's there, that he might act as her redeemer. That's a technical term that Boaz would have been aware of. He would have been aware that she was a widow. He was aware of who her mother-in-law was, Naomi. He was aware that he was a close relative of Naomi's. He was therefore aware that he had a responsibility to fulfill this task. But he also identifies, and we know that in verse 12, that he says that there's a closer redeemer, there's a closer relative to you than myself. And we need to establish whether or not he wants to take up the option of being the redeemer. And we'll do that in the morning. And if he doesn't, I will redeem you. The promise. There's the difference, you see, between the person who goes to church and the person who wants a relationship with God. The person who goes to church wants to have some contact with God. We know that God is real because we have that truth in our hearts. Everybody knows that God is real. Even those who say there is no God know that God's real because they have that in their hearts. How do we know that's the case? Well, you ask someone who says they don't believe in God, and you ask them something about God, and they get really worked up and angry and annoyed, really agitated. Why do you get so angry and agitated about someone that doesn't exist? I mean, if someone said to me about leprechauns that, you know, that I should really think about leprechauns at the bottom of my garden, or a bottom of where I grew up in Northern Ireland, there was leprechauns. You know, and somebody came along and said that to me, I wouldn't get angry and worked up about it. I would just look at them and say, "Have a nice day." Why do people get so exercised who say that God doesn't exist? Why do they get so venomous about telling us that God doesn't exist? It's because they know that God exists, and God says they try to suppress that truth in their hearts. There are those then who decide, I'm going to go along and try and go along and be acquainted with God or know something about God or be with people who believe in God. So I'll go along to church and I'll be in church and I'll some of their influence might impact me. But that's it. That's it. That's as far as it goes. There's nothing more than that. There are those people then who God shows their real need to. Their real need to. God shows their real need to. And that's the key point. Only God can show the real need. God showed Naomi here her real need. If God shows you your real need, that your real need is not just some contact with God, but that your real need is a full and absolute restoration of your relationship with God. If God by His Spirit works in your life to see and to hear of your real need, your real need, your real need. If that's where it's at in your life, then you know you can go to God because He has provided a Redeemer for you. And His name is Jesus Christ. His name is Jesus Christ. I can't convince you of that real need. We in this church can be friendly towards you. We can seek to encourage you to seek after God. But we can't prize into your heart and open your heart up. We cannot get inside your mind and address your mind. Sometimes you will be moved by some of the things you hear in this church. Sometimes you'll be excited about it. I am no longer really all that astonished when people say, I was moved by what you did today or said today. That doesn't really startle me any longer. I've heard it so many times. I've seen people come in and they sit down and they say, that was astonishing. I've never heard anybody explain the Bible in that way before. And people come in and they'll sit for 2 or 3 weeks and they're gone, or they'll sit for 2 or 3 months, or they'll sit for 2 or 3 years. And then what happens is the cares of the world, as God says, weighs down on them, and the reality of who they are and what they want really breaks through, and they don't want God. And that's why we have encouraged each other to pray to God, to ask God to be at work, to open people's hearts and heads to desire this relationship with God by His Spirit. It doesn't happen by ourselves. We cannot make it happen. We have a responsibility to inform people and to be loving towards people and to tell them about the opportunities of a relationship with God. We have the opportunity to tell them to come and lie, as it were, at Boaz's feet. We can tell them about the privileges that there will be for them. We can try and seek to encourage them, to say to them, when you think of what you're going to lose, you're not going to lose anything, you're going to gain everything that there is to be gained through this relationship with God. Because as you see it at the moment, as you see the world at the moment, you're looking it through the eyes of someone who doesn't see the way that God sees. You're looking it through the eyes of someone who isn't taking into account how God works. You're looking through the eyes of someone who doesn't behold the things that God beholds. But when God comes and you lie at the feet of the Redeemer and you come to the Redeemer and you ask the Redeemer to work in your life, you ask the Redeemer to own you and to purchase you and to buy you back, you come to Jesus Christ and you believe in Jesus Christ, then if that happens in your life, everything changes, because suddenly you're in a relationship with God. And what you couldn't see before, you now see. What you couldn't understand, you now understand. What made no sense now makes sense completely. And the other reality is that your life separated from God for all eternity will change for all eternity, because you'll be with God for all eternity. But you have to decide whether you're going to lie at the Redeemer's feet or not. You've got to decide. You've got to choose. You've got to choose whether you're going to stop making excuses and say, I can't go to His feet because of this, this, or this. You've got to choose whether you're going to go and lie at the feet of the Redeemer like Ruth did and have Him come to you and say, who are you? And for you to say, you know who I am, because you brought me here. You brought me here. And you brought me here to change my life. And I believe you and I trust in you. And I will walk in your ways all the days of my life. Do you want a relationship with God that's real? Do you want a relationship with God that is real? Then you've got to choose what you want to do. You've got to go to where God is. You've got to ask the Redeemer to change your life. And the promise is there that if you seek Him, just as Ruth sought Boaz and found him, so you will find Him, and your life will be changed. And all the joy, even in the hardship, will become real to you. Amen. We're going to close.